I'm Julie Burstein. I'm here for Leonard Lopate. These days, when you can't remember something, what is it that you do? You know, maybe it's a fact about your hometown, or you can't remember how to raise the blades on your lawnmower. I bet in most cases, you Google it. At least I know I do. Betsy Sparrow, assistant professor of psychology at Columbia University, has researched the ways that our access to internet search engines like Google is altering the way we remember things. She explains her findings in the article, Google Effects on Memory, Cognitive Consequences of Having Information at Our Fingertips, published last month in Science magazine, and she's written it with Jenny Liu and Daniel M. Wegner. And Betsy Sparrow joins us now to look at how our memories are changing and what it means for how we learn. Hello.
Hello.
So your research shows that people are more likely to forget what we know we can find on the internet.
Exactly.
And do you think this is evidence that our brains are adapting to all of this information that we can get just at the touch of a couple of buttons?
I think it is, but at the same time, I think it's pretty much the same process that we've always used. So we've always used other people as information sources, as these external memory systems that we can access when we need information, and we tend to make them responsible for knowing certain things.
Mom, how does this work?
Right, or, like your significant other, and, knows a lot about baseball. And so the internet is really just it's a much broader and much more salient way of doing that, right? So we, like you were talking about, we all do this where, as soon as you have a question, you just go right online. So the information is just much more accessible. And we all realize that we're doing this and we wonder what it's doing to our memory. And so that's why I wanted to look at, what is it actually doing to our memory?
It was interesting as I read about your research and then also thought about my own way of finding out answers now. I thought about exactly what you talked about, which is the loss of the relational piece. I know you write mm-hmm. about how your husband knows a lot more about baseball than you do, so when you've got questions, you ask him.
Right.
But now we're asking a box on our desk that, a glowing box on our desk, which is a whole different way of finding information.
It is, but in some ways, it's really not that different because the internet is people.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so that it's just an interface with interact with a lot of different external memory systems, that are really other people putting information in. We put information in, and we take it out, and so it's just allowing us to access a lot of other people through this interface of this electronic box, right? So it's not some sort of cyborg that's giving us
not yet anyway, right?
So there is still a human element to it, but you're right, it is one degree removed.
So once you got intrigued by this, how did you develop a study to figure out what this might be doing to our memories?
So I knew there's a really well-established psychological task called the Stroop task, which is this color naming task where you have to try to name the color of a color word.
Yes, but the word is in a different color,
yeah,
so that yellow may be in blue.
Right, and so it's hard to do because the words are what we pay attention to more, than the font color, let's say. We're used to, not really paying attention to that. And so if you modify it a little bit and you give people a cognitive load, you can have them memorize a five-digit number or something, and you give them other words to see if those words are particularly salient to them, so words that they're already thinking about. And so what I did was I asked people a bunch of difficult questions that they didn't know the answer to, so that's the type of situation where you would go online to look up something,
mm-hmm.
And then I gave them words that were, Google, Yahoo, computer, mouse, things to do with what you would look, go to use to look it up. And I found that it took them longer to name the color in those kinds of words than for other words.
And what did this show you?
So this told me that people do automatically think about the computer when they don't know the answers to things. So I just wanted to make sure that was true, and it wasn't just me.
And I don't know whether you used words like teacher or brother-in-law or things like that. That might be another way of finding these things out.
There was another study that I did that I didn't publish. So people still do think about other people. So I pre-tested people and asked them, what does your mom know? What does your dad know?
Uh-huh.
And it turned out to be fashion and cars. And so I wanted to see if words about, you know, that were related to mom and dad were primed in the same way, and that they were, you know, they automatically, interfered with this color naming task. And I found it again. The problem with that study is that the, you know, fashion and cars are kind of associated with male and female already,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it's a little bit more conflated than with the computer, because the questions I asked them weren't anything about computers.
So it
just made it a little bit more difficult to say, well, I can say something about this. But there is some evidence that people still, you know, look towards other people.
In this study, you look at different kinds of memory. And can you talk about the two main different kinds that you explored?
Yeah. So the first was memory for the actual information. So I wanted to see, I wanted to boil it down to the essence of what I thought was the difference, and that was accessibility. So if we thought information is easily accessible, would people not remember it as well, even if I asked them to? So if I said, you know, really try to remember this, would they do it if they thought it was accessible later? And it turned out that they didn't.
And so this
suggests to me it's largely unconscious. It's not something we're doing. We're not saying to ourselves consciously, oh, well, I don't need to know this, you know, because I can always look it up again. It's just that, you know, part of our brains is saying to ourselves, you know, well, this is more efficient, right? I can locate it externally because I can always, you know, go on my smartphone or on the computer or, you know, whatever. If you're on vacation, you ask somebody something, or, you know, or you want to know something or you read something, you're probably more likely to remember it because you won't be able to access it later unless you make it accessible inside your own head.
Mm-hmm. And then there's also something called transactive memory. Is that what you're talking about?
That's what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's this idea that that, you know, we've always used, you know, other people, other materials as these external memory kind of storage systems, so that we don't have to remember everything that we come across. And it seems to be, you know, particularly you know, an adaptive thing to do, you know, with all of this information that we can look up online. You know, if I can go, online to look up a specific psychology article, let's say, and an hour and a half later be reading about theoretical physics, right? Like, it just, you know, you just tend to kind of get lost in the web sometimes, you know, where you end up reading like five or six or seven different things, and, you know, it can't remember at all. So it's, I think, you know, in some sense, it's adaptive to do this, and maybe more so than we ever did before.
Do you feel, you said this is adaptive,
mm-hmm.
you think. Do you feel that this leaves room for something that's more important?
Yeah, I do, because I don't, well, so, I mean, this might just be because of my own inadequacies, but I've never been someone who's equated intelligence with memorizing things. So I think it's possible that once, you know, if you move away from a memorization model, say learning, that it might be possible that people will understand the concepts more. Right, so that, and understand how to apply things to new situations. That if they don't have to worry about the names and dates and all that kind of thing, that, you know, usually come along with information.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I've just found that with my students and teaching and stuff like that. So that's the thing that I'm looking at next. Is if people believe information will be accessible, you know, once they read about something, are they better able to get the big picture out of it?
That's interesting. And you say you see this in your students. Can you tell me a story about how you see that? What it is that's making you think this is an area I should be looking into?
Well, it's just because I don't particularly prize memorization,
mm-hmm.
so I don't test that. So I pretty much say right from the beginning, you know, I don't care if you remember the details of the experiments I'm telling you about. I don't care if you remember who ran them. You know, what I want you to get out of it is, what does this tell us about, you know, the human cognition, you know,
mm-hmm.
what does this tell us about what people would do in, you know, say a similar situation, or if you change the situation this way, would it still, you know, would people still behave this way, you know, in general? And that's what I want them to get out of it is this is, you know, it's the situation, you know,
mm-hmm.
like what are the components of the situation that, you know, push people one way or the other. And that's harder for people to do than just regurgitate, you know, facts back at you. And so, you know, when I first test them, they get upset because they don't do very well.
Oh, that's interesting. And how do you test them? What do you put in front of them then if it's not in 1869?
Well, usually I ask them to apply it. So I'll say, like, so imagine this kind of situation. You know, what would you expect people to do? You know, and so they have to understand kind of like what's the main component that was, say, manipulated in this experiment. Like I was talking about the accessibility. So, like, if I ask somebody a question about this study, I would ask them, you know, what was the main component that made people remember or not? You know, and then they have to understand that it's, you know, whether people could access information or not, not whether, you know, there was a lot of information thrown at them or, you know, how much information there is on the internet. That's not what I studied. You know, I studied whether people know more or less now. You know, that's not what I looked at. So it would be, you know, something like that. And they tend to get better over the course of the semester. They start to, you know, process things in a different way, I think.
And understand what it is.
Understand what it is I'm trying to get at.
One of the interesting things in your research was that people might not be able to remember the information, but they could remember the particular folder that it was stored in, sort of like...
Yeah, that pretty much blew my mind, to tell you the truth. I mean, the folder names, the way that I set up the experiment, they're so generic. I mean, they're completely interchangeable, and I assign the trivia to them randomly.
What kinds of names would they have?
I mean, I actually have to look.
They were so generic, you can't remember them.
You know, it's like items, things, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, just completely not memorable. And I didn't highlight it really in the as they were doing it. So they're typing in these really memorable trivia statements like, an ostrich's eye is bigger than its brain. It's like, oh, my God, wow, really? You know, and you kind of expect them to remember that stuff. And it turned out they remembered where to find it.
Even if they couldn't remember which was bigger.
Actually, they tended to remember where to find it, particularly when they didn't remember the statement. So when they did remember, you know, when they wrote down the trivia, when the recall test, they didn't remember where to find it. So they prioritized one or the other.
Huh. So
it's really pretty cool.
As you look forward, tell me a little bit, we've just got a minute left, about mm-hmm. this new experiment that you're doing. How does it build on what you've just done?
So like I said, I'm looking to see what kind of potential, you know, benefits might come out of this. Because obviously the internet, you know, is not going away, right? So kind of going, oh my God, you know, I don't remember phone numbers anymore, and I look up everything online and I don't remember it, and kind of like doomsdaying like the future of intelligence, I think, is not particularly, you know, valuable looking forward. Like, what we have to do is figure out what people can do now, maybe more than they did before, and how to say change, you know, education or something for the future. So that's what I'm hoping to accomplish.
Well, that'll be so interesting to see, but I'll probably have to remember the folder in which it's stored when I do go
It is a skill to find information. I mean, you know, like knowing where to go in a database and how to perform a search and that kind of thing is a skill. I mean, you know, it's not, you know, typing in like who was the actress in this movie is not particularly difficult, but finding, you know, a reference that you need to find that you, you know, when you're writing up a paper or something is something that takes a while, you know, to do well. So I think it is a you know, that part of memory that, you know, is important to kind of, you know, to strengthen.
It sounds like what we'll need going forward is not the map, but the compass to be able to figure out where to look, because everything will be there that we'll be able to find it.
You're right.
Well, I've been speaking with Columbia University psychologist Betsy Sparrow about her paper called Google Effects on Memory, Cognitive Consequences of Having Information at Our Fingertips. It's published in Science. Betsy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. ¶¶